Most of us live in a political bubble. What happens when it bursts?
My show began at 8:30 in the morning. It was March 28th.
Conservative talk show host Charlie Sykes.
I did not expect that he was going to call in.
Joining me on the line is Donald Trump. Good morning, sir.
Hi, Charlie.
We began the conversation rather friendly.
Congratulations on the birth of your grandson yesterday.
That's so nice.
And I asked him,
wouldn't it be a good way to start off your Wisconsin campaign by saying that wives should be off limits?
Putting aside his personal attacks on the looks of Ted Cruz's wife, could this be something we could agree on? And his response was,
he started it. If he didn't start it, it would have never happened. But he started it.
I expect that from a 12-year-old bully on the playground, not somebody who wants the office held by Abraham Lincoln.
I asked him at one point, do you know that I'm never Trump?
No, I didn't know that, but I assume you're also an intelligent guy. I know you're an intelligent guy.
No, not really. By the end of the day, he was saying, that Charlie Sykes, what a dope, what a dummy. I thought you were supposed to be smart.
I thought this was actually a dead issue until I just spoke to you. I mean, I'd rather be talking about trade.
My name was added to the long list of people who were insulted by Donald Trump.
Donald Trump, thanks so much for joining me. Okay. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much.
I got a lot of blowback. Your job is to defend the conservative no matter what. And I realized that I was definitely crossways with the audience, as it turned out in November. At 8:29 on the morning of March 28th, I was a right-wing talk radio hack. By 11 o'clock that morning, I was one of the deepest thinkers in American politics.
And today, he's the liberals' new favorite conservative. Charlie Sykes spent more than two decades hosting a popular conservative talk radio show. He railed against the Clintons and Obama, and he helped push Paul Ryan and Scott Walker onto the national stage. And now, well, he's a frequent guest on MSNBC. He explains why in a book called How the Right Lost Its Mind. He told Steve Paulson,
there are just some lines you don't cross. I understand and respect the people who made the binary choice on an issue like, for example, judicial appointments. But there are some moments where you go, look, if you fundamentally believe that someone is unfit to be the president, someone who is a serial liar, a con man, who mocks the disabled and women, who lacks both the temperament and the character to be president, you don't change that simply because he wins a nomination. He's either fit to be president or he's not fit. And there's a moral choice that you have to make. And I think that Donald Trump taints both the Republican Party and conservatives. And what I'm most concerned about and what I really address in this book is not so much a critique of Donald Trump as what his embrace has done to us.
At one point in your book, you say, and I'm quoting here, for years, we ignored the birthers, the racists, the truthers, and other conspiracy theorists who indulge fantasies of Obama's secret Muslim plot to subvert Christendom or who peddled tales of Hillary Clinton's murder victims. So I guess the question is, why? Did you and, you know, so many other conservatives ignore those cranks over all those years, you know, before this point, you know, sort of what became the breaking point for you?
I did for years try to push back on that. And what I found was that for a long time, I was able to do that, but that something had changed in 2015 and 2016, where it became impossible to push back on fake news, this propaganda, this sort of misinformation, because we had created these alternative reality silos, and that no matter what I cited, it wasn't going to be the same thing. But could I have done more? Yes. Could everybody else have done more? There's no question about it. And I think part of it was this sort of sense that, okay, well, they're on our tribe, they're misguided, but they're our allies. They're like your drunken, bigoted uncle at Thanksgiving. You don't throw them out of the house, but you assume that at some point you can turn on the game, you can change the subject, and the center is going to hold, and it didn't. And I think that was a fundamental moral failure on the part of the conservative movement.
Was this whole process hard for you personally? I mean, did you have to go through a fair amount of soul searching?
Oh, I thought it was a brutal, soul-crushing slog. The amount of disillusionment
I mean, it wasn't just about Trump. It was just sort of about what had happened to the Republican Party.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying you take the focus on Donald Trump is Donald Trump. He's not going to change. It's looking around and saying, okay, I've spent 25 years in a movement that I thought I understood, and clearly I didn't. I have friends and allies that I thought I understood and I thought I knew, and maybe I didn't. And if, in fact, this movement can produce someone like Donald Trump or produce the people that support Donald Trump, then somehow a lot of my worldview is a little bit shaken. And it was shaken.
And you quit your radio show.
Well, I was planning on leaving anyway, although this experience made it an awful lot easier. But the real price, I think, is paid in the loss of a lot of friends and, you know, being part of something. I mean, I understand why people stay in political tribes. That's a place where you know that you're safe, you're going to be protected, you're going to be defended, and that when you step out of that tribe, you're going to be accused of apostasy. You're going to be accused of being Judas. You're going to be accused of being an opportunist. You know, and a lot of that is brutal.
So I want to back up for a moment and talk some about your personal history, because you actually grew up in a liberal household, right? I mean, your dad was a big supporter of Eugene McCarthy, you know, who campaigned against the Vietnam War.
Yes, my father was very active in the Democratic Party, and he was campaign manager here in Wisconsin for Eugene McCarthy, who was, I think, for him, the ideal political figure. And I think that I grew up thinking the same thing.
And so, I was astonished to read that, I mean, you actually went to the 68 Democratic National Convention, the famous 68 convention when all hell broke loose, and you were a page for the Democratic Party.
I have a picture of myself on the floor of that convention looking very, very young. Well, my dad actually let me, when I was in eighth grade, and he let me fly around in the plane with the National Press Corps and Eugene McCarthy. So I became a political junkie very, very early on. But Eugene McCarthy was a very unusual figure. He wrote poetry. He was articulate. He was a thoughtful individual. He was not a demagogue, and he was not an ideologue. My father was also the president of the Wisconsin Civil Liberties Union. So I did grow up in that. You know, I mean, obviously that shaped my perspective. As both he and I think, became disillusioned with some of the extremism on the left, both became conservatives in somewhat different ways.
But it's one thing to idealize Eugene McCarthy, and then, okay, you know, you're kind of turned off by sort of extremism on the left, but then to switch all the way over to becoming a, you know, very well-known conservative. I mean, you're talking about a major political conversion.
Well, you're also talking about a long time and many, many years to do that. But, you know, reading the George Wills and the William F. Buckleys and the Milton Friedmans, beginning to think that conservatives had better ideas, that there was something lazy and something sort of just rote about what liberalism had become. So imagine fast-forwarding now, then seeing us become the party of non-ideas that we experience in 2016.
Now, you talk about what has become of the conservative movement, and you say there is the perpetual outrage machine. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that's one of the key things that's happened to the conservative movement, and I think we're seeing it played out in real time right now. That really, starting around the time that Barack Obama became president, you had this vast network of conservative organizations and conservative media that decided that the way that they could raise money, get clicks, raise their ratings, was to keep the audience outraged, angry, feeling betrayed all the time. And they beat those drums throughout the Tea Party movement. Doesn't mean that there weren't things to be legitimately opposed to, but the perpetual outrage machine basically needed to keep people angry all the time. It was the business model. But the problem is, it's hard to turn that off.
I mean, one of the things you're obviously criticizing here is the echo chamber. You know, you only listen, you only pay attention to media on your side,
correct,
the stuff that you believe in. Is there an equal echo chamber on the left?
That's a really interesting question. There is an echo chamber on the left. There is an alternative reality silo. If you watch, and I, of course, contribute to MSNBC, you know, if you read Salon and MSNBC and you read The New York, I mean, you'll get a completely different view of the world than if you look at the Drudge Report, listen to Sean Hannity, and read Breitbart.com. I sense that it's become worse on the right. Now, if you and I had this conversation 10 years ago, I would have said it was the opposite. But something flipped, something switched, to the point where I do think that many people on the right willfully separated themselves from the mainstream of society and from fact-based media in a way that was shocking to me.
So let me ask you about that. I mean, obviously, Trump constantly, you know, accuses certain mainstream news organizations of fake news, of being fake news. You know, New York Times, CNN, NBC News. It's not just Trump, of course. It's Rush Limbaugh. It's Hannity. It's Drudge. It's all these people. What do we make of this whole fake news charge? I mean, why has that stuck?
Well, first of all, there really was fake news during the 2016 campaign, and we are only now getting a sense of how bad it was. I mean, absolutely maliciously invented bogus stuff. What Donald Trump has done is he flips it around and sort of projects to take that problem, which should have been kind of a red light for both conservatives and Republicans, like, what are we going to do about this, to beat up on the mainstream media.
Do you think the mainstream media has a liberal bias?
Oh, I think there's no question that it's had a liberal bias, but that doesn't mean it's fake news. And here's the mistake that I made. It's one thing to criticize something saying, I'm going to criticize you because you are so important and I want you to get better, as opposed to, I'm going to delegitimize you and destroy you completely.
Can you sort of paint me a quick portrait of influence in conservative media? Fox News, Breitbart, Drudge, do they actually make and break politicians?
Yes, and you've named three of the four that are absolutely important. The Drudge Report is virtually the assignment editor for a lot of conservative media. So when the Drudge Report began linking to Alex Jones and InfoWars, you know, the really toxic conspiracy theories, that was a huge moment in the conservative movement because it injected a lot of this toxic sludge into the mainstream. So the Drudge Report is immensely influential. Breitbart is relatively recent, but as the Columbia Journalism Review study, I think, demonstrated, with that huge infusion of money from billionaire Mercer family, they became the center of their own online media ecosystem that really drove Trump, attacked critics of Trump, not always with great success. They tried to beat Paul Ryan in the primary, failed miserably, but they campaigned hard to get Fox News into line, to have them become more Trump. Fox News, obviously, is absolutely essential. People will often say MSNBC is the equivalent on the left of Fox News on the right. That's really misleading. Fox News is far more influential. I mean, Roger Ailes wanted to be a kingmaker. Roger Ailes knew exactly what he was doing. And I do think that for conservatives, Fox News was the one that shaped the worldview in a way that I don't think there's anything on the left that comparable to that. And then the fourth, besides the Drudge Report, Breitbart, and Fox News, would, of course, be conservative talk radio, led by people like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. And they played central roles in the rise of Donald Trump.
So they create politicians, national politicians.
They have become the gatekeepers. And it's very difficult to imagine anybody winning a primary that doesn't have strong support on one of those four elements that I mentioned.
Now, obviously, you are saying there's something seriously wrong with our political culture and the media that contributes to that. And it sounds like you're saying part of the problem is we get stuck with these binary choices, Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. How bad is this situation? If you sort of put on your historical hat, do you think this is just sort of this bad phase we're going through, that we have a really hard time talking to people who disagree with us politically? Or are we in a crisis right now?
Well, I do think that it would be a mistake simply to say that, okay, we're just going through a phase, because we are not immune from history. You look around, the history of democracies is the fact that they are not immortal. I'm torn between thinking that our politics is like a pendulum and that we swing back, that after Nixon, we got Jimmy Carter, you know, after Carter, we got Reagan. The alternative image that I have is that it's a ratchet, and that every time you coarsen politics or coarsen the culture, that ratchet goes down and it doesn't come back up again. And that the damage that's done when, for example, Bill Clinton, you know, lies under oath and it's considered okay, that plays out then 20, 30 years later when the other side says, well, you didn't care about your guy. So 30 years from now, what are our politics going to be? How will they be shaped by what's happening right now? How far down does the ratchet go? I mean, I feel that our politics has already been coarsened and damaged rather dramatically in the last couple of years. And I don't think you just snap back from that after 2020.
Well, I hope you're wrong.
I desperately hope I'm wrong.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
That's former conservative talk show host Charlie Sykes. His book is called How the Right Lost Its Mind, and he was talking with Steve Paulson.